Hey, Justin.
Hey, Andreas.
It's been a second. I think we haven't done a podcast because we've been in solidarity from the writers' strike. Our writers have gone on strike, but we've decided to be scabs.
Yeah, we're ready to cross the picket lines. We're ready to scab it up.
That's right.
It's been long enough, man. You know, we have our principles, but...
Well, the workaround is that we're not actually doing this episode. We just hired AI. We just... This whole thing is running through ChatGPT. So we're good, man. There's no rules around that.
The technology is incredible. It sounds really like us, too.
I know. I almost feel real.
I feel like this is better than the new Indiana Jones movie. I don't know if you saw that one. But they've gotten really better on the de-aging tech, but then they decided not to de-age the voice. And watching a young Harrison Ford with an old man's voice is a bit odd.
Well, like most of America, I miss that movie. So, and like most of America, they're going to miss this podcast too with our 7 listeners, probably 6 at this point. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Andreas Sturgeon.
And I am Justin Womack.
And we are the Marketing Geeks.
Yeah.
Marketing Geeks.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So, good sir.
Yes.
Lots been happening, man. The writer's strike. Tell me what you know about the writer's strike, because this is fascinating.
This one is very interesting. So the writer's strike plus the SAG Screen Actors Guild strike as well simultaneously. Apparently the first time since like the 60s that this happened simultaneously. Mm-hmm. My understanding is that it has to do with AI. It has to do with getting royalty rights from streaming services. And right now, it sounds like the streamers are really, or at least the studios, are really screwing over the little people, screwing over the actors on the royalties from streaming views. So,
well, let me break it down for you,
because yeah,
I know a bit about this. I used to work in the industry myself, and I still have friends who work in the industry.
And wait, real quick, though, let's not forget that I worked on an Eric Roberts movie that didn't get released widely, but I worked on it. So I'm also, you know, from that industry.
That's right. You're well connected to Eric Roberts, drug dealer. So basically, it comes down to this. So back in the day, when you would do an episode of something, like for instance, before the 60s, 70s, they never had residuals. So my father, for instance, who wrote an episode of Star Trek, I think he got paid like $1,000 to write the episode. And he never saw a dime, even though he came up with the phrase "live long and prosper." He never saw another penny from that. And because of Star Trek and Gilligan's Isle, those specific movies or TV shows rather, they formed a deal where basically, if something played on TV every time it played, they would get a small royalty check. And part of that funding came, of course, from advertising and rights to actually show the content. Well. Streaming comes along, and they don't have those deals because it's not it's not broadcast on traditional TV stations. It's a tech company streaming content, so they didn't have any of these deals. And so when Orange is the New Black started playing on Netflix, the show was widely popular, and at one point it was as popular as Game of Thrones. But the actors, they got paid their day rate. And then they didn't get paid anything else. So a lot of these people that were making a pretty good living as writers and actors were doing all these streaming shows because they thought, oh, this is the new frontier. But then every time they streamed, they weren't seeing any money, mostly because Netflix wouldn't release any of the data around what was being seen, right? So so the actors have been pissed about this for quite some time. And then, of course, AI enters the scene. And part of the contracts that have been available to the actors, especially like people who are in the background or only have a few lines, is that if they are in a scene, then the studio who uses that content or who makes the content can basically use their likeness forever and ever in all perpetuity and any kind of thing throughout the universe, these crazy contracts. So basically what that means is if I have a bit part in a small thing, they can scan my likeness and use it over and over and over again and don't have to pay me a dime. So, and of course, now with things like ChatGPT, you can even write stuff. The other problem is that back in the day, you would have like 27 episodes of a TV show every season, and now you only have 10. So people just aren't getting paid as much. And so this has become quite a problem. So now, because of that, you know, the writers and the content creators, they want to get paid. And that's what this all comes down to.
So it sounds like the writers were relying on like single page. I mean, in the past, they were relying on the check plus the royalties to create a nice living. Once streaming rolled along, they were getting single paychecks, and then it was like they were kicked to the curb. That's it. You got paid. That's it. You're done.
Right. And so some of the actors that were like, again, in Orange is the New Black, they do the show. They were popular characters, but then they had to like still wait tables, you know, and that was never the case. Once you have a breakout role, you usually can, you know, get the residual checks to keep you afloat.
Yeah, which makes sense. That's how I think how it should be, how it should be structured. And then the other thing that you mentioned is those contracts with the AI, that they put in a line in the contract to say we're going to own your digital likeness for all of eternity and perpetuity.
Right, across the universe.
It reminds me of that South Park with the where they didn't read the Apple terms and conditions and then got signed up for a human centipede thing.
Right. So it's kind of like that. And so this ties into something else that's happening in Hollywood, which I find extremely interesting. So you'd look at the you know, when I was, you know, much younger and working in the entertainment industry, summer would roll around and like every week there'd be like a new like blockbuster film. You know, people couldn't wait to see the new Batman or whatever it was. And the movies were very exciting. People are not going to the movies as much anymore. And if you look at the big movies that typically would have done well, most of them either bombed or did not perform quite as well. So we had the Indiana Jones film definitely was a bomb.
Huge flop.
The Mission Impossible movie is flopping. The Flash was a flop. Fast X did not perform quite as well as they thought it was going to. And all of this is because if you look at the movies that bombed, and then you have these other movies, Barbie, Oppenheimer, and this wild card, Sound of Freedom, which we'll get into in a second, all of those are doing really well. And what's the through line with both of these sides of the issue? The sides of the issue is that on one hand, you have movies that are franchises like Transformers that typically people would pay over and over and over to see. And these other side, Barbie, Oppenheimer, and Sound of Freedom, those are all movies that are original and new.
Well, Barbie for now, don't get me wrong, Barbie's about to be a massive franchise. So.
Oh, sure. And Mattel now is, you know, believe me, there's going to be a Monopoly movie any day, a Hot Wheels movie.
Oh, for sure. There's going to be a million games that nobody wants made into movies.
Right. So that's coming. But for today in 2023, those movies are hot because people just want to see new stuff.
Now, real quick, on that same note, though, there are a few exceptions here because like Elemental is the newest Pixar Disney movie, which opened very small. So it had a hugely disappointing opening. Now, it picked up steam late, like it started, it really had a lot of staying power, but because the opening was so low, it's still going to lose money, so it's still going to be considered a flop. It may end up breaking even over time with streaming rights and things like that, but that's I think there's something about kids movies that are really just not working as well as they used to. like parents just don't want to take their kids to the movie. And that has to do with price too, because
exactly,
take my son to a movie, even in a matinee, is I think $11.50 right now.
Right.
And it gets up to like $13.50 at night, I think, or on prime hours.
Exactly. So if you, if you're like, you know, if you're a couple that has a child or two children, that trip to the movies is basically a whole year of streaming service. And you know what? It's going to be on streaming in 3 months anyway, number one.
And the kids don't care. Like, my son prefers to watch it at home.
Right. And that's the other thing. Kids don't have the attention span to sit in a movie theater anymore. In fact, I was reading about how teachers, you know, they would play movies in the theaters or in
classroom,
in classroom for a special occasion or whatever. And everybody would watch the movie, at least when I was a kid. And now they have to play the movies in like 15-minute increments because the kids just don't have the attention span. So the whole concept of like sitting through a 90-minute movie, you know, it's really, really hard for people.
Now, what if you could break down the movie into like 90-second clips, and then you watch 90 seconds, you swipe up, it goes to the next 90 seconds, you swipe up. Maybe that would work.
Yeah, that's TikTok. But you know, but that's why, you know, it's kind of interesting because it's hard for people to sit through 3 hours of Oppenheimer, but they will binge watch, you know, 15 episodes of, you know, a season of something.
James Cameron made that point when he was talking about the length of Avatar 2. He's like, don't give me anything. You guys are binge watching for 15 hours straight. I don't care about your complaints about a 3 hour movie.
Right, exactly. But, you know, he's also James Cameron. So I'd watch that guy eat breakfast, to tell you the truth. So we're at this weird crossroads because the reason that the strike is happening also is because you know, the streaming services basically killed the movies, and they thought that this was going to be the moneymaker. But what the streaming services didn't take into account is the fact that the people who make the content need to get paid. And AI is a huge threat to this. I mean, we're at the beginning stages of this, but pretty soon AI will be able to create a whole video game to your specific taste.
Kind of already can, but not advanced though.
Right, but we're in the early days of this, right? So it's, yes, like comparing video games today to like Pac-Man. You know, it's like the technology, and it's, you know, it's exponential. So 9 months ago, no one even knew what ChatGPT was, and now it has taken over our lives, and it has become essential. And but it is also, and this is another interesting thing about that. As ChatGPT has become more of a thing that we're all using, it's also had to put they've had to put guardrails on it, so it's become dumber. So it's not quite as smart or creative as it used to be, and so people are now complaining about that. So all of this it leads us to this weird unknown territory where the writers and actors strike looks like it's going to last us at least until the end of the year, which means that the last time this happened, we just, you know, and let us not forget that the whole reason that we have Donald Trump now is because of The Apprentice, and The Apprentice happened because of the last writer's strike. Yeah, so you know, these things have a rippling effect. So prepare to see a lot more reality television and possibly stuff that's just AI created.
So you're saying that this could trigger a Trump 2.0 candidate in the future? Could be 10 years from now, but it could be the genesis right here.
Yeah, if the AI robot overlords don't kill us all first.
Good point. Good point.
Will probably happen anyway. So anyway, it's unknown territory. But at the end of the day, I, you know, when things are in complete madness, I always ask one specific question, the most important question, which is this: how does this affect me?
great question.
Right.
Yes, the most unselfish, down to earth question you can ask.
Right. And the reason why I'm asking that is because I have started integrating AI into my workflow and to great effect. But ultimately, I also know that the human element is not going to be needed at all either. And so very shortly, the idea of having a marketing person who is doing strategic marketing.
Hey, shh.
I mean, as long as the people I work for don't realize that, that's fine.
That's true. Yeah. Good point.
So anyway, I don't know where this is all going ultimately at the end of the day, and I do know that once we hit this wall of content not being able to be readily available for us, you know, are we just going to watch shows from Korea? I mean, like,
yeah, you know, I guess go back to YouTube. I mean, it's probably good for YouTube streamers, I would imagine. Now, one thing I want to say, though, is that I feel like in the month of July 2023 here, we witnessed the, like, rebirth of the cinema with the Barbenheimer double feature effect, with the Barbie opening up to well over almost $200 million. I mean, well over $100 million, almost $200 million. Mm-hmm. And huge success, which I would not have predicted a year ago. I saw ahead of time the projections were coming in like this the last couple months, but I would never have predicted the success of Barbie. So they did an amazing job with the viral marketing campaigns they've used there.
Yeah.
But we witnessed the rebirth of cinema plus the re-death of cinema, because now the writer strike is going to be absolutely, writer and actor strikes are going to be absolutely crippling. You have all these like two-part movies that release this summer, because Hollywood always does this thing where they, you have one person does like a little gimmick and everybody copies it. So we had Fast X is a two-parter, Mission Impossible is a two-parter, the Spider-Verse movie was a two-parter, Dune, and now a lot of these movies weren't filmed back to back, so they're now in production delay, yeah. For indefinite time. And then we're seeing a lot of these movies that were scheduled for release this fall are starting to get delayed. Small ones, like there's Kraven the Hunter, which is based on a Spider-Man villain, which was going to be a terrible movie anyway. But they've been airing the trailer in front of, I think in front of Oppenheimer, like most recently. And then just a couple days ago, they announced that they delayed it an entire year. And they've already invested a bunch of marketing. And part of the reason for that is that the actors are not allowed to promote the movies during the strike. They're not allowed to go on like whoever the talk show host, Kimmel and whoever, Colbert and all that, to promote. So we're going to see a long-term rippling effect that's only getting started. And yeah, maybe it's good for YouTube streamers. Maybe it's good for obscure content on Netflix. I don't know what to expect right now.
Yeah, that's the most interesting part of all of this, is that we are in this uncharted territory, and we don't know where it's going to go at all. So I'm hoping that that something new and creative comes out of this. And the thing that I find really interesting, and especially with these two-part things, is that people are tired of that too. Like, yeah. You know, I pay my money. I want to see a movie. I don't want to pay my money and basically hold content for ransom. So I got to pay more. It's like an upgrade.
Yeah.
Just, you know.
It's like watching a season finale and then you have to wait, you know, and then you're on the cliffhanger and you have to wait a year. And it's annoying.
Right. It's annoying.
I find it very annoying. Yeah. I don't like, yeah, a movie is supposed to be a complete story. It needs to be a complete story. And there's better ways of doing this too. These movies this year all ended on like pretty ridiculous cliffhangers. There's better ways of doing that, that it still kind of give closure to the current story while leaving it open for a sequel. That's okay, but not like the way they did it with these movies.
Exactly. And that's why I didn't see Dune, and that's why I didn't see Spider-Verse, and that's why I'm not seeing Mission Impossible, because you know what? I know also before the next one comes out, they're going to do like a special release and play it in the theater, and I'll just see them both back to back at that point. I mean, I just...
That's just smart.
Yeah, and plus, you know what? I'm tired of movies. I'm just like, they're just awful. I mean, there's nothing good. I'll go see Oppenheimer because Christopher Nolan has never made a bad film. He's made movies that are not really good.
He made Tenet, which can be pretty complex and a little bit more complex than it needs to be.
I feel that his movies sometimes are just a gimmick, and he drapes a story over a gimmick. Mm-hmm. Tenet is a perfect example of that, but it was still entertaining and original. It was fresh.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't a great movie, it was a good movie. And so I'll always see a Christopher Nolan film.
So we do need to close with the comments about those three movies that are peaking right now. So Oppenheimer, Barbie, and of course, Sound of Freedom. I wanted to hear your take on that one. I'm sure you're a big, big fan, I think.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting story. So Sound of Freedom was originally created by another movie company. And the movie company was going to release it, and they passed. And so the company that actually made it is this Christian film company called Angel Films, and they got their start basically taking regular movies and taking out the sex and the swearing, all the good stuff that I go to movies for. But they took it out, but they were doing it without licensing, and so they got sued. And so they started making their own content. I don't know who's backing them. They obviously have some rich backers. But this is a movie about child trafficking, which, you know, everyone can definitely get behind the evils of child trafficking unless you're Matt Gaetz. But the way that it operated was they got churches involved, and you know, churches have huge networks, and they basically did this whole pay it forward campaign where they would sell out theaters with no one in it, and so you could buy essentially tickets for someone else to go see it. And so they would play the movies, they'd be sold out, but there'd be no one in the theater, which was kind of weird. But it turned out that the movie wasn't that bad. And so word of mouth actually got people behind to see the movie. And it's also kind of this movie that people got behind, much like Temptation of the Christ a few years ago, Mel Gibson's film, because it was like, you know, a way to stick it to Hollywood. We're going to show you that, you know, a movie that's outside of the Hollywood system can be profitable. And so, it was kind of like the movie was almost a meme in its own right, with certain segments of right wing populism. So
that pay it forward campaign was brilliant. And that was a huge, huge success.
Yeah.
So basically people could buy a ticket for themselves. And because this movie is about child trafficking, they're going to have an emotional connection and they might want to buy a ticket for somebody else who supposedly can't afford a ticket. And so it was a massive, massive success marketing campaign. We're probably going to see that replicated, I imagine, in the future.
Well, we'll see if it works again. I mean, again, it was kind of a meme in its own right. I haven't seen the movie yet, so I can't speak to it to tell you how good or bad it is. I do know that the guy who the movie is based on kind of exaggerated what he did in some ways. And James Cavill, the main actor in there, is a bit of a fruitcake. He's an anti-vaxxer, a QAnon.
He played Jesus in Passion of the Christ also. Let's not forget that.
Yes, he was an actor in a movie. So, but I don't know. I'm just kind of, I mean, it's interesting. I think it's a fascinating case study. Whether or not it can be replicated is going to be, you know, we'll see. But when a movie like that, which was made for $15 million, is now, you know, on track to make like $200 million domestically, that is definitely a success story. It cannot be ignored. Whether it can be replicated is anyone's guess. But it, once again, is another part of this narrative about the film industry completely collapsing. And what happens from here? I don't know, man. And the other thing is, I've been playing a lot of video games lately, and I could buy a video game, you know, on sale for $15-$20 and spend hundreds of hours in it. And honestly, it's far more entertaining than a lot of the crap that's being pooped out into the theaters these days.
That's interesting. Now, I do want to talk about the Barbie marketing campaign a little bit too, because Barbie obviously has been this massive success. And a lot of that relied on kind of viral marketing efforts, people posing in the Barbie box, things like that,
right,
on social media. What have you seen as far as that goes? Like, what's your take on why Barbie is so popular? I know, obviously, it's touching a customer base that has been around for 50, 60, 70 years, however long that toy's been around.
Right. It's a touchstone.
That's why it's working.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's like every little girl in the world and some boys grew up with Barbie. You know, my son had a Barbie doll. He wanted a Barbie doll. We got him a Barbie doll. He still has a Barbie mermaid doll that he plays with.
I had a Cabbage Patch doll. I didn't have a Barbie though.
Yeah, well, maybe that's...
Cabbage Patch, maybe that's a big franchise to adopt next. That could be the next one.
Oh, I'm sure it's coming, you know. But Cabbage Patch dolls aren't like as popular. I mean, Barbie transcends, you know, cultures and It's been around forever, right? So everybody knows it. It's a well-known franchise. And I think the other thing is that one of the reasons that a Barbie movie never happened up until this point is because it's one of these things where you really have to get it right, because you can't be too superficial with it. The tone has to be good. I know that there was a Barbie movie that they wanted to do with Amy Schumer a couple of years ago.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah, I remember that.
No, right.
Yeah.
And her take on it was like, it was going to be all about like, oh, body positivity. I'm not Barbie enough. And so it was going to be really making fun of Barbie and kind of, you know, using Barbie as a punching bag. But this movie respected the IP. It made it fun. It made it interesting. It got the tone of it right. And that's why it did well, you know, because I think that a lot of people were just kind of waiting and seeing. But when it was obvious that they really nailed it, then yeah, why wouldn't they go? You know, why wouldn't people want to see it? And I do think it's telling that people on, especially people who tend to be a bit more right wing and neo-Nazi flavored, have been really angry at this movie. They don't like it, which means that it must be good.
Well, it pokes a hole in the whole go woke, go broke narrative also.
Right.
I mean, like, this movie has a lot of those kind of politics. I mean, what do you want to call it, politics, whatever. There's a lot of patriarchy stuff in there. And anti-patriarchy, and it's a huge, huge success. So you know, they've always been poking at the new like Marvel movies and things like that, claiming those are the reason for their failure has been that it's been diving too much into left-wing politics.
No, the reason why the Marvel's been crashing is because the movies suck.
I'm just saying that's what the narrative has been on that side, and this pokes a big hole in that also. So that could be part of the reason you're seeing a bigger backlash, because like it's like this just crushed my world.
Yeah exactly. So yeah. I'm especially in the next year or two, when the actors and writers strike really starts affecting long-term movie release dates, content release dates, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens from here.
Well, we can always make Marketing Geeks the movie. Won't be too exciting, but you know.
Well, I'm willing to option it, man. I'd option Marketing Geeks the movie for like $10, really.
Yep, pay it forward campaigns and
yeah,
all that too. Yeah,
yeah, but I don't know if I'd want to watch us talking about marketing for.
Oh no, not for us to watch. No,
2 hours. We'd have to get like Paul Rudd would have to play me maybe.
But if we could sell out empty theaters, then maybe.
Yeah, I could sell out an empty theater without me being in it and without getting any money either, so just claim it's
brilliant.
Yeah. In other news, X.
Yes, X.
Okay, so
what is X?
You know, there was a day and age when I thought that Elon Musk was a brilliant guy, although I read his biography by Amy Vance, I think it was Amy Vance, there was one thing that stuck out to me, and there's a story where, as he was getting SpaceX off the ground, there was one of his chief engineers wanted to. He got a call; his wife was having a baby, and he told Elon they were like just a few days, I think, away from launch. And so he said, "Hey, my wife's having a baby." And in front of everybody, Elon yells at him and says, "Do you understand that we're making history here? You better get your priorities straight, man." And I thought, you know, and then when he called that guy who was trying to rescue the kids in Thailand a pedophile simply because he criticized his submarine idea, I started to realize this guy might have some problems. So,
well, it goes beyond that too. I mean, if you remember in the book, like every company he worked at, he had people that absolutely despised him. I mean,
yeah.
He was a very polarizing figure. Like some of the founders and people were very anti Elon Musk. I mean, especially
right.
I think through the PayPal Mafia guys, what they call the quote unquote PayPal Mafia.
Right. And remember it when he had PayPal, which he wanted to call X, by the way.
Yes.
They voted him off.
Well, no, he had a company called X, which was a payment processing company that got bought by PayPal, and that's how he got absorbed into PayPal.
Bought by PayPal, right? And then he wanted to call it X PayPal, which is like kind of funny. But then
no, Elon, no.
Well, then he got voted off the board and replaced by Peter Thiel.
That's right. Yeah.
So, remember, Elon really hasn't invented anything. He's bought companies, and his brilliance has come from knowing how to kind of position them.
Yeah, because Tesla was like a hostile takeover, I believe.
Right.
And now Tesla is very different than when it was when he took over, though. So you have to give him some credit there on where he's taken the concept. But he definitely did not start the company, did not come up with the name. He just came in and took over the company.
Right, exactly. And now now in full view, we can really see like what this guy, who this guy is. And I think, and this is really funny because I mentioned this before. Someone reached out to me on LinkedIn and said they were going to stop listening to the show because I was criticizing Elon Musk's takeover and what he was doing to Twitter. And he said that he couldn't stand by what I was saying because it went against free speech. And now we know that he's banning people who criticize him on Twitter. And now he's taken Twitter and turned it into this thing called X, which would be the equivalent of someone taking Q-tips and changing it to, we're going to call these things R's now. I mean,
the next letter of the alphabet, the next logical letter. Yeah.
You could buy cotton swabs anywhere in the world, but you call them Q-tips. It's synonymous with what that product is. Twitter is a noun and it's a verb. You know, I'm going to tweet somebody. And now what am I going to say? I'm going to X somebody. Does that mean I have X videos?
It's weird. And now Elon has had this vision of creating the X app, which he calls the Everything app, that he's talked about even before he bought Twitter. So this has been something in his mind that's existed for a long time. It's not out of the blue. In my opinion, this is one of the worst business decisions possibly I've ever seen. I think this is on par with when FedEx Office bought Kinko's and they got rid of the Kinko's name. And it was a huge decline in the company's value because of it. It really confused people. It caused problems. Kinko's had become a verb, just like Twitter and tweeting have become verbs. And I think this is a massive mistake on Elon's part because what he paid whatever $45 billion or whatever the amount was, I forget at this point. He bought that brand, and that brand was the value, and he's not wanting to change it. I just do not agree with that decision. I think it's a mistake.
Yeah, and I think ultimately it came down to one thing. Elon Musk is a guy that shows what happens when you can afford to buy all the cocaine.
Now that I think about it, I just realized like SpaceX, he has an X in that one too.
Yeah, and in Tesla he has the Model X, right?
So that's true. Yeah.
So he has this fascination with the letter, which is funny because I did too when I was 12.
But you grew out of that. So he's still in that arrested development stage, maybe.
Yeah, and so anyway, it we will see what happens with it. But the value of the company has already sunk tremendously. He's not paying his bills, and that's the thing. If he wants to have this Everything app, which is similar, he wants to have like a WeChat type. Experience for people. WeChat is the app that they use in China that does everything. That is the Everything app for them. But the Chinese government owns it. And Elon wants to have something like that. But no one's going to use it because he is a toxic brand now. He connected to it is, you know, I would never give my data to that guy ever. And a lot of people feel that way.
You know what's funny is today I read a story today that says that they're rolling out a new feature that allows the anyone that's paying for to be verified on Twitter, which is like $10 a month or whatever they charge,
$8.
They can now hide their verification if they want to. They're giving people the option to, you know, maybe they're ashamed that they paid Twitter to be verified, so they can hide that on the page now, which I think is funny. That was a story today.
Oh man, so what was interesting, of course, is threats, right? So Zuckerberg saw an opportunity, and so he created the Threads app, which is just
a clone.
But and that's when he started it. Then first Elon Musk challenged him to a cage match, and then. And then he challenged him to a literal dick measuring contest.
Oh, yeah. He actually literally put that in a tweet.
Which makes me think this guy has just lost his mind. I really do. I think that the guy is just like up all night doing coke, and he comes up with these crazy ideas and just goes with it. And no one, he has no one to say no to him. And so the interesting thing about Threads is that it was attached to your Instagram account. So anyone who has an Instagram account could bring all of their followers directly over to Threads. And it was the fastest growing app ever. But it's declined like 80%. People just don't use it.
And it's only been around for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Right, right. So the question is now, you know, also, do we need a social media app at this point?
It's lasted this long. I doubt that people are abandoning. There's going to have to be, something's going to have to step in to replace it.
Do we need something to replace it, though?
We definitely don't need something. We don't. But I just feel like the populace disagrees with that statement.
Yeah, the populace, 50% of the populace also thinks that a rapist and a con artist and now a twice convicted, twice impeached felon.
Thrice now.
So will be a suitable president. I give up, man.
My thing with that is like, okay, let's just roll this out and say like for some crazy circumstance. So you have Donald Trump who has 3 indictments now. And he's got another one coming in Georgia, most likely. It's been, there's lots of sources saying that he's going to get indicted in Georgia with like RICO charges and some interesting charges from there. And then on top of that, he has he lost the civil suit to E. Jean Carroll for the rape suit. And he has to pay out on that. And I know there's more litigation. I don't know what else is going on. He's being sued by New York.
Yeah, there's the Georgia case.
Yeah, well, I was going to say the Georgia case. That one, he's going to get indicted for that almost certainly.
Yeah, yeah, like any day. Yeah. And Jean Carroll is probably going to sue him again because he just couldn't keep his mouth shut. And so,
no, but I want to say is that, okay, so let's say that he does run and early polls suggest that the race is actually still somewhat tight. I mean, those could be way off. Who knows?
Yeah.
If he were to win the election, like, people would, you know, they freaked out in 2016, but it would be what would happen if he won?
That's a great question. It's uncharted territory. I mean, some of the other investigations that are going on, he could just have his Justice Department kill them, you know,
he could theoretically pardon himself on all 3 of the federal ones. I don't know about Georgia's a state one, and they don't, and actually the,
and the
they
New
don't
York
allow
one.
For gov. They don't allow for governor pardons in Georgia, which is interesting. And then the New York one too. But the New York one would probably be pretty minimal, even if he gets convicted. It's not like a huge. I don't think he'll be serving any. Yeah. He'll be sentenced with any severe time. Maybe like a year or two, which is a lot for his age.
And it's really wild. And here's the thing that really gets me. And if anybody's listening and they don't agree with this, and they're like, oh, the whole thing is a political hit job, just do me a favor and read the indictment. Like, read all the indictments. I've read them all.
I haven't read the newest one. The newest one dropped yesterday.
Yeah.
I read the one. Classified documents one.
Yeah, and the new one is 45 pages, which is kind of funny, because you know 45, right? And but if you really look at it, it's like they've got this guy. It's damning. Like basically he, you know, and the argument is like, well, it was a free speech thing, and he's allowed to do that. And in the very opening sentences of it, they say, yes, he is allowed to say whatever he wants. But what he did was act on it. It's the difference of me saying, you know what, Justin, you and I, we should go rob a bank. And I'm going to tell all my friends and I'm going to tell the podcast, everyone listening, that we're going to rob this bank. So meet me at this bank and let's go rob it.
And we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. But the difference is that even if everyone shows up at the bank, if I have talked to my lawyers to figure out how to get me out of trouble when I walk into the bank and actually steal the money, that turns into a crime. It's the intent, and that's what we have here. And so,
I'll have to read that specific indictment. I have not looked much into that one. It rolled out, like I said, it rolled out last night or late yesterday. But it's got some serious, very, very, very serious charges in there. So
absolutely. And I, you know, and the federal government has like a 96% success rate with, bringing charges down. So we will see. But, you know, does that mean that you know, really, do I have to have a choice between Joe Biden and Donald Trump again? Like, there are 350 million people in America, and these are the people that you're putting up to run for president? For God's sakes. I just don't see
another way. I mean, like, with the Republican side, they have that tech entrepreneur. I don't know how to say his last name. It's tough to pronounce. Vivek Rama something.
Yeah.
Vivek Ramaswamy. There you go. And he's well-spoken. He's just not, I've never heard of the guy. I think
his whole platform is he's going anti-woke, that whole anti-woke thing.
I mean, he's a well-spoken guy. He's got some business success and some things. And then there's Mike Pence, who
funny that you didn't mention DeSantis.
I'm going to end DeSantis. DeSantis has really hurt himself through this process. It's been interesting because he was beloved by the MAGA crowd.
Well,
and now he's kind of he's like in a weird little spot right now.
The latest is that he claims that slavery was actually beneficial for black people because it gave them skills they didn't normally have. And instead of like backing off of that, he's doubling down and really like so. Even the black Republicans that were behind him are now like, whoa, dude, that's a little bit too far.
Yeah. What's interesting with him is he takes some things way too far. Because he has support from some moderate people. Like, there's a lot of moderates who like some of the stuff DeSantis does, at least economically. But then, like, with abortion, like, they feel like he's taking that way too far. With, what's the other one that just came out? There was another issue with the, I don't know if you saw that, he did a campaign where he was like playing old clips of Trump. Kind of welcoming a transgender person into the one of the Miss Universe pageant, and he was trying to use that as like a bashing point, and it kind of backfired.
And that was really interesting. Yeah. So talking about marketing, so this was a clip that was released by his camp, and it was like showing, you know, that Trump was pro LGBTQ, and then it would intercut with like what was considered real men, like manly men, and it showed like the guy from Peaky Blinders. And it showed Christian Bale from American Psycho, like really?
He like wears makeup in that movie, I think.
No, but I mean, it's like, so you're telling me that your idea of a real man who aligns with your ideals is a psychopath? Like, really? That's your stance?
Well, and the thing with that is, I think anyone who has any sort of reasonability on that, like, the thing that you can reasonably argue on the whole transgender thing is like women, like whether they can play sports or not, women's sports. That I think has a reasonable argument.
Does it though? How many trans sports people are there in the country?
There's not a lot, really. I mean, it could become a problem.
It could.
It takes away from women opportunities. It could. And we had a transgender person win the women's college swimming
meet. Who cares? There's
well,
so
I don't personally care, but women in sports probably do.
Fine, they are like what? That's not a very huge voting block. I mean, the real problems in the country have to do with the environment, with like you know, the stagnant wages, with the fact that, you know, people are saddled with medical debt, and this. This is the problems that you like.
It's a smaller issue. I hold my ground on that. That I don't agree with. I feel like there's an advantage, and if we're talking about like potential of a transgender woman who would be a biological male getting a woman's scholarship for college, that's potentially a problem. But it's not really happening right now, so it's theoretical.
That's the point. Yeah. Like this is all theoretical. Who does this really affect? If you could probably fill a room with the people this actually affects. But the things, you know, it's just a culture war issue that makes people go crazy because, you know, and I hear what you're saying, like, well, it could lead to something else, but it's recently the Supreme Court ruled that that web designer case where somebody said, well, I don't really have I'm a web designer and I'm thinking about starting a company that does wedding websites. And if the possibility arises that a gay couple comes to ask for my services, I shouldn't have to do that, right? but it was all made up. It didn't.
It's crazy. It was crazy to read that, that that was not actual. That was not an actual circumstance, but it was a made up scenario. That was weird.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's what I'm saying. Like the same thing with the transgender issue. We can't go by what might happen if all of a sudden, you know, you have the women's soccer team is all, you know, men, transgender men, and they keep winning the Olympics. Okay, maybe then we start to discuss what the real this being a real issue, but it's not happening. It doesn't affect anybody.
But I think what DeSantis did with that, with the approach of that video though, was it came across as just, you know, homophobic, transphobic, instead of like even he didn't even attempt to nuance it. It just came across like it just rubbed people the wrong way. Even Republicans who are super against that, like the women's sports thing, for instance, and then another one that gets, I think, blown out of proportion, I imagine, I don't know yet, is the idea that children can transition at school without telling their parents, which I think is also probably more of a hypothetical. But that's another one that I see brought up all the time.
Yeah, and which is weird because so here in the Netherlands, there are kids that do come out as transgender. And you know what happens when that happens? They introduce the kid like, oh, last year this was Jens, and this year she's Ruby. And all the kids go, okay, cool. When's lunch? Yeah, I mean, nobody gives a crap, and it's not a problem here. And guess what? The society isn't crumbling. In fact, the Netherlands is doing quite well. So you know, we have our own problems over here, but this is not one of them. And so I think it's just something that it's a great way to distract people from the real issues, which you know, there are real problems.
And to be fair, if you're a parent and your child is transitioning without your knowledge and they're on the hormones and you still can't tell, it's probably a reflection of parenting too.
Well, you know, and I don't have any idea around like giving children hormones, you know, when they're transition, when they're becoming.
That's all. There's not enough long-term research on that, but that's like, I don't know. Yeah.
Right. But I do know my kid well enough to know that if my child was coming out and was just like, I feel more comfortable as a woman or as a girl, I would respect that. And if it was obvious that that was their identity, I would probably have to just say, okay, well, let's look into these treatments. And it's, you know, it's, I have transgender friends and they're really concerned, you know, and they're not eating children. They're, you know, and here's the other thing.
Yes.
Whenever you hear like so often, like, you know, priests, you know, coming out, a youth pastor coming out, molesting children, having, you know, those are the people that are really over and over again. You don't hear about drag queens molesting kids that often. It's not an ongoing
problem. Sure, it happens in the minority, but yeah, you don't hear about that often.
Right. So again, this is not a problem. It's a way to distract from the real issues. So, you know, what does this mean? I don't know. Cancel your Twitter account and don't watch a movie, watch Barbie.
Be a little cautious on some of these. I mean, the transgender community, let's also remember, is so small. I mean, we're less than, maybe it's grown a little bit, but last I've known, it was less than 1% of the population of people that identify as trans.
Right.
Maybe, I know that number has grown over the last few years as identified, but even when people identify, the vast majority don't have the surgeries. It's a very, very small percentage that have the surgeries too.
And the ones that do overwhelmingly are happy with the decision. So overwhelmingly, and here's one last thought before we leave the subject. When the Nazis came into power, one of the first things they did was they went after trans people. And one of the first places they did book burnings was at the world's first transgender institutes in the world. It was in Germany. And they went there and they destroyed it and they burned all the books that were there. It was one of the first targets. So, you know, if you're not compassionate around someone's immediate experience and you feel you need to go after someone because you don't agree with their lifestyle choices, that shows that you have a lack of compassion. And as I've said before, you know, not every Republican is a Nazi, but every neo-Nazi seems to vote Republican for some reason. Is there a connection? I don't know, man. I just want to live my life and do my own thing. And that's why I'm, you know, I just identify as a human being.
Still not a fan of the sports thing.
I don't care about sports either. So maybe that's why, but who knows? But what else you got for me, man? We're running over. So
yeah, we're wrapping up here. Let me find. I had one more. I had like one or two stories here I wanted to talk about. Meta, mm-hmm. Facebook, the company that became the metaverse company when Meta was trending, and now they're like, whoopsie. They are releasing a AI music generator. This article was from today that can be used to take text prompts on this is using royalty free music that Facebook owns as the learning basis, mm-hmm. to then create your own music. So I haven't tested it yet. When I went to the website, it looks like this is something you have to kind of like set up on your own through a platform called Hugging Face, which is similar to GitHub, I think. And like you can get like some code and you can kind of run it on your own. But there's three basic tools here. There's the text to create music prompts. There is I believe it's text to create sound effects, so you can create example is given with like a dog barking and things like that, and then it also will automatically has a codec that will just compress the files and maintain like the highest quality with the compression. So that's like the three features. It's something I want to play with. I think it's going to be potentially interesting. I think that idea, that concept, it may not be Meta's tool, but somebody's going to come up with an awesome music generator if it doesn't already exist. I just don't know about it. And I'm excited to play with that because the image generators I'm getting a little bored with now. So
man, one day AI is just going to replace us, as podcasters as well. And then,
We've played with like, writing scripts on ChatGPT. They're not so great still, but there's no question in my mind, given another couple of years, that AI is absolutely going to be able to replace 90 to 99% of all jobs on Earth. So
we cannot put the genie back in the bottle. It is out. So,
well, unless we use an EMP.
Or the robots take over. And if they do, as we have always said, we love you, AI robots.
Yes, we are on team AI.
That's right.
I want you to know that.
Please don't kill us with your giant.
Yes. Spare us because we love you. We serve you, AI.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, another episode of the Marketing Geeks. They're far and few between, but we're always we're always thinking about you.
Well, quick announcement here.
Yes.
My intention here is to kind of reboot my own business, which has been a little bit lacking this year, I would say, just because I haven't put in the effort and the focus I have in the past. But one of the things I want to do is do a challenge for myself to use AI to create monetization streams. And I'm giving myself a 30-day challenge, possibly 60, but the first 30 days are going to be no paid advertising. And we'll see if they have any sort of success here. But the second 30 days theoretically would be taking the same concepts that I've already started with and then adding in the element of paid advertising to see if that monetization can occur or scale or whatnot. And so my goal is to actually use the podcast platform here to release a few episodes a week or one a week at least to kind of go through the process here. And I want Andros to follow along for the journey provide me with great criticism
and
support and all that. Yeah.
I remember your last AI endeavor where you were making AI t-shirts.
I was going to create creating the image, selling royalty images on a few different platforms.
Yeah, how'd that go?
I did it for a while, and so far I've made zero sales. Whoops.
Okay.
Whoopsies.
Well, I'm sure with this next endeavor, you're going to make 1,000 times more than that.
I just need the social pressure, man. I just need to know that all of the millions and millions of theoretical listeners are listening, and I'll know that I need to perform for them.
Okay.
They're relying on me. They're depending on this.
All right. But challenge accepted. However, one caveat to this is that you have to have your plan AI developed. So you gotta.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely what's happened. Yes, that's part of it.
So here's the challenge, 30-day challenge. Can you make money from a business developed 100% from AI?
Yes, with no advertising spend and very limited spend out of pocket. So I'll be using, I think I'm gonna re-upped the, to the ChatGPT-4, so I'll pay the $20 a month for that one, but very limited on the out-of-pocket spend. Oh. So we're gonna keep it like under $100 or so.
Oh, this is going to be good. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't
wait. Yeah.
All right. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. This is gonna get juicy.
And with that,
ladies and gentlemen, I'm Andrew Sturgeon.
And I'm Justin Womack.
And we are the Marketing Geeks, and we are out.
Stay classy.
Marketing Geeks, come on, bring your friends. We'll learn marketing from distant lands. Andrew Sturgeon and Justin Womack, the fun will never end. It's Marketing Geeks.